As my mother walks me down the long hallway to my first grade classroom on my first day of first grade, I can feel my excitement growing. No more half-day kindergarten. No more learning our colors. No more enforced nap time. First grade is serious business. As we walk hand in hand down the gleaming linoleum hallway of the elementary school, my mother asks me what I'm most excited about. I tell her, I can't wait to learn to read. Then she asks me what I'm most worried about. I quietly say, Mrs. Wongren. At this point in her career, Mrs. Wongren has been teaching first grade since she was a young woman. She is now a year or two from retirement, and she has lost much of the passion for teaching that she once had. Even among little kids, Mrs. Wongren has a reputation for being a real sourpuss. It is not considered good luck to be assigned to her classroom. But like all teachers, she is respected, and my parents and I are willing to give her a try. My mother and I reach the door of Mrs. Wongren's first grade classroom. We take a deep breath, and in we go. The first person I see when I enter the classroom is Emily Polish. She is my friend from church. We have spent many hours playing together, and we were in kindergarten together. I am so very glad to see that she's in my class, too. But she looks nervous. As Mrs. Wongren and the parents talk, Emily and I sit dutifully in our desks like the other children. Because we are seated in alphabetical order by last name, Emily and I are not anywhere near one another. But we are brave. That is, until the last parent has left the room and Mrs. Wongren begins her gruff classroom orientation. Emily begins to cry. I sit there confused. Less than a half an hour ago, I had been excited about first grade, but no one seems to be coming to comfort Emily, so I begin to cry too. Soon, the whole first grade class is sobbing. 15 little kids with their new haircuts and their new school clothes, all of us crying just to support the others. We have all been in situations where we were frightened of something big and new. We've all found ourselves thinking, wait, how did I get myself into this? We've all come to the aid of someone else who is having a hard time. The truth is that life often sends us situations that surprise us or surprise the people around us. We have all been in Mrs. Wongren's first grade class, crying our eyes out. And we have all been the person comforting those around us. Selfless courage in the face of a threat is one of the most noble things about humankind. But showing solidarity with another person always puts us at greater risk. This fall, our nation commemorates the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Movement led by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. It has been a half a century since those harrowing days of race riots, police brutality, and the KKK. It has been half a century since African Americans said, "We will not be treated like this anymore." Though we may be tempted to think that everything that has happened in the last 50 years was inevitable, that is not the case. When Dr. King stood on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and told our nation that he had a dream, he meant exactly that he had a dream. and nothing more. The men and women and children who stood with one another, black and white and brown, had no guarantee that they would prevail. There was a hatred loose in our country, and any who dared to confront it knew what the risks were. Yet hundreds of thousands of people stood together, facing insults, threats, beatings, police dogs, and fire hoses. Hundreds of people lost their lives, and the hatred was diminished, if not defeated. The leader was killed, but not the dream. Solidarity prevailed, but at such a great cost. To be a religious person is to live awake to the world in all of its beauty and its horror. To be a religious person is to risk our comfort, our reputations, even our lives to serve the good. It takes humility to be a religious person and trust. We must be willing to go where we are called, knowing that we serve something much larger than ourselves. We must be able to remember that it's not about us. One of the most enduring stories of trust and solidarity from the Jewish tradition is the story of Ruth and Naomi. It is the story of three widows and the hard choices each of them made. Listen for a bit to this ancient teaching story. One day, Naomi got herself together, she and her two daughters-in-law, to leave the country of Moab and to set out for home. She had heard that God had been pleased to visit the people there and to give them food. And so she started out from the place she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, on the road back to the land of Israel. After a short while on the road, Naomi told her daughters-in-law, "Go back, go home, and live with your mothers, and may God treat you as graciously as you have treated me. May God give each of you a new home and a new husband." She kissed them, and they all cried openly. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth embraced Naomi and held on. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law is going back home to live with her own people and their gods. Go with her." But Ruth said, "Don't force me to leave you. Don't make me go home. Where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Your people are my people, and your God is my God. Where you die, I'll die, and that's where I'll be buried. Not even death is going to come between us." When Naomi saw that Ruth had her heart set on going with her, she gave in. And so the two of them traveled on together to Bethlehem. Can any of us imagine being widowed in a far-off country? Can we imagine deciding to set off on an arduous journey back to a place that we left long, long ago? Can we imagine the grief of sending away the people that we love the most? Naomi had lost everything. She felt truly alone in the world. She was strong enough to make a change, but she was unsure if it was the right change or not. At the very start of her journey, Naomi tries to go it alone. She tries to be noble and brave. She tries to be self-sufficient. And she weeps at the thought of the lonely road ahead of her. But Ruth sees that she belongs with Naomi. It is Ruth who is bravest. She recognizes the bond between them is what is primary. Ruth's faithfulness to Naomi is her present, not her past. Can we imagine what it would be like to say, Where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Your people are my people. Your God is my God. These are powerful vows. Whether you like to admit it or not, you are a religious person. How do I know that you are a religious person? You are here. And that is all that matters. You are here, and that is all that matters. Simply bringing your own beliefs to this community makes you a religious person. Hallelujah. But I'm also here to tell you that just coming here is not enough. Religion is the practice of one's belief. Religion is active, it is daring, it will ask much of us, and it will sustain us through any hardship, because the deepest truth that we all celebrate week after week here is that you are not alone. Study after study shows that above all else, humans seek meaning. We seek meaning because meaning allows us to get beyond ourselves, beyond our own selfish wants and desires. Meaning frees us up from the terrible treadmill of achievement. It knits us together. You must seek and find meaning in your life, an unselfish meaning that comes through acts of service, large and small. Think for a moment about the relationships in your life. Who is your Naomi? The person you love so much that you would change your life entirely to follow him or her. Who is your Dr. King? The person who inspires you to act in ways that are principled and daring. Who is your Emily Polish? The vulnerable person in your life that you would stick up for. And who sees you as their Emily, or their Naomi, or their Dr. King? The truth is, we are always a mixture of all three. We are always the one who is both vulnerable and courageous. We are always the one who is both loved and who feels abandoned. We are the one who is simultaneously inspired and very much in need of inspiration. In every moment, we are both weak and strong. Every day, we are in need of others, and they are in need of us. This morning, we stand in the doorway of a new year. This is our first grade year together, you and me. I am just as nervous and excited about this year as I was walking with my mother down the hallway to Mrs. Wongren's classroom. I suspect that you are a bit nervous and excited too. Other hands have held mine to get me to this place. Other hands have held yours too. Here is our classroom. Here is our playground. Here is our home away from home. Here is our sanctuary. It is our first day of first grade. A few tears are to be expected. As Emily Polish and I and all of Mrs. Wongren's class sat crying, a figure appeared in the doorway of the classroom. It was Miss Hansen, the kindergarten teacher from down the hall. Hearing the lamentations coming from our miserable lot, she had come to investigate. Without hesitating, she smiled at us and came right into the classroom. Having left her own class of kindergartners happily finger-painting with her assistant, Miss Hansen was there to help Mrs. Wongren. This young woman, whom many of us had had as a teacher the year before, knew that her colleague needed support. Mrs. Wongren, older and much more seasoned, needed the kind of help that comes from abandoning protocol and really seeing the other person. "Now, what seems to be the problem here?" Miss Hansen kindly asked. The wailing calmed down to sniffles. "Who here is having a tough time today?" she asked. Every hand went up, including Mrs. Wongren's. "Well, let's see if we can figure this out," Miss Hansen said. "Who is having the toughest time?" We all looked at Emily. Miss Hansen went over to Emily, knelt down beside her, and asked her why she was crying. Emily told her that she missed her family and that she was scared to be at church, at school. Or church. Works just as well here. Miss Hansen told Emily that she was not alone. She showed her that she had lots of friends in the classroom, including me. Next, Miss Hansen asked all of us if we thought that today was tough for Mrs. Wongren too, since she had to learn all of our names and help us get settled in. Snot dripping from our noses, we nodded in agreement. Like some vision of the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus, Miss Hansen walked around the room with a Kleenex box, giving us each one, and then she was gone. Calm had been restored, courage had prevailed, and Mrs. Wongren opened a storybook and began to read to us. "We come together here for a reason, you and I. May courage and trust and love grow among us. So be it. Amen."